Welcome to Torati Mecha of the OU Women's Initiative. My name is Shira Shaiwitz, and today we'll be learning Eicha Perek Gimel. Over the past 30 years, we've experienced what has become known as the memoir boom. All over, there are new books coming out that are written by the individual describing their own unique experiences. And even our understanding of history has shifted because we've begun to see history through the prism of the individual human experience. And in many ways, it's easier to connect to the plight of the individual or the individual story over the story or the suffering of a group. We care about universal tragedy, but what really pulls our heartstrings are the personal connections. Eicha chapter 3 steps away from the descriptions of Aleph and Bet of the communal tragedy, and instead we focus on the individual. And aptly, it begins with the words, Ani hagever ra'aini. I am the man or the person here who has seen suffering. Instead of starting with the word Eicha, like chapters 1, 2, and 4, we have a different formulation. We're still in the Aleph Bet structure, so Ani starts with an Aleph, but it's not Eicha. It's a different type of description. And one other difference is that it's a much longer perek. It's 66 psukim instead of the usual 22. So each letter of the Aleph Bet gets 3 psukim as opposed to 1, but yet they're short. And I think this matches what's happening here. There's these kind of short psukim, but a lengthy reflection of what is the experience of the individual like. And while the Midrashim raise different possibilities about who this unnamed person, who is this Gever, I think we can view this almost as the voice of every man or any woman who is going through this suffering. What does it feel like emotionally for an individual to go through this process? And I will say that emotions run high in this parak. And the parak begins really on the heels of what we saw in Parak Bet, which is the theme of anger. And similar again to Parak Bet, the author uses metaphors, and he describes how much he suffered by the hands of Hashem. The pasuk that strikes me the most is pasuk Yud, where he says, Dov orev hu li, aryeh b'mistarim, he's a lurking bear to me, a lion in hiding, waiting to pounce and destroy me. And the imagery in this reading is chilling. It's the opposite of the idea of Hashem as our protector, and here Hashem is described as like a sinister destroyer. And in fact, this image is so chilling that the Midrash identifies the subject as Babylonia and not God, trying to step away from this idea that God could be a bear in hiding or a lion waiting to pounce on us. But interestingly, Rashi still maintains the pshat reading that this pasuk is describing Hashem. Now, when I was actually recording the podcast on Parak Bet, which also had this very similar angry accusation to Hashem, my son was in the room, and he said to me afterwards, but why does Tanakh have this? Like, this shouldn't be in Tanakh, right? Why does Tanakh capture these psukim where that are so angry to Hashem? And I think that this is really Tanakh putting these psukim here are almost legitimizing in a certain way that this is a legitimate feeling. This anger is something that is part of human nature and human emotions. And we'll see that I think the message is, as long as you keep the relationship with Hashem, there is a place for anger. Now, in this case, ultimately the hurt and the anger leads to despair. And in Pasuk Chaf, he says, Va'omar, I said, Avad nitzri betochalti me'Hashem. I've lost like my strength and my hope and my future from God. And the truth is, there's no real comparison to the depths of this depression, like in other places of Tanakh. In Tehillim, there are other laments where, the Mizmor expresses distance and loss of hope. But almost all those Parakim of Tehillim end with some kind of tefillah. But here, the core difference is not only that the lamenter feels that his prayers aren't answered, but there's no attempt to pray. And the lack of the prayer symbolizes the lack of relationship. But almost as soon as these words leave his mouth, our author jumps back in and says, Zot ashiva libi al kein ochil, right? I'll still tell this to myself, and therefore I'll still hope. Chaste Hashem kilo tamnu kilo chalu rachamav. God's mercy, God's kindness never ends. His mercy is always. It's not finite. And continuing on, Chalki Hashem Amra Nafshi, my soul says that my portion is with God, Al Kein Ochilo, and therefore I will still hope in him. And it's interesting that it was so abrupt, right? We had the anger, we had the loss of hope in Hashem, and then a few psukim later, already, our author was saying, no, but my chilek, my portion is with God, and therefore I will hope. Twice it uses, within three psukim, it says, I won't hope, and then followed by, no, I will hope. It's so abrupt, actually, that the explanation of the Dat Mikra is that this must be a different voice. Maybe what we're capturing here are different voices of individuals. But I want to offer an alternative suggestion, which is that maybe hearing the desperation where he said, I lost hope in Hashem, that brought him so low, you know, when he uttered almost like the unutterable, that it was saying this that shook him back up and pushed him to actually work on restoring his relationship. Right? His voice says back to him, don't give up hope. Right? Hashem's chesed doesn't end. I want this relationship. So now I need to think. And now we move into stage two of the individual reflection, which is the philosophical stage. Our author begins to think and says, well, if I want to restore my relationship in Hashem, I need to deal with the problem. And the problem I'm dealing with is I don't know why Hashem has caused so much suffering. And he begins to explore that question of theodicy, right? Why do bad things happen to good people? And for the next 20 psukim, he runs through a whole number of possibilities, right? His first possibility he suggests is, it must be that Hashem is actually kind and merciful. I just can't see it. And the Gemara understands this as the assumption that tzaddikim will suffer in this world, in Olam Hazeh, but there will be a reward for them waiting in Olam Haba. So yes, while I don't see Hashem's chesed and Hashem's rachamim, Hashem's mercy and kindness, that's because it's Olam Hazeh. And if it was the world to come, then I would understand it. Okay, second explanation that our individual author offers is suffering builds character, and in fact, the right approach is to lean into the suffering. And then he goes on to suggest, well, actually, I must have sinned. And since I sinned, even if I'm not aware of what it is, this is my punishment. And this kind of philosophical exploration prompts our author to move into stage three. So he began with the anger, then moved on to the philosophy, and then he moves to action. And the reflection really falls by the wayside as our individual moves to the third stage, which is action. And he says, Nichpesa darkenu v'nachkora v'nashuva ad Adonai. And here we have the communal, we will search our ways and we will return to God. And he goes on to say, Nachnu pashanu umarinu, right? We sinned, we rebelled. But then all of a sudden, this wholehearted ownership of, wow, these are all the things I did wrong that must have gotten me to this place, that starts to fall apart also. And then he finishes almost that same pasuk by saying, I sinned, I did wrong. And then he says, Atalo salachta, but God, you haven't forgiven me. So what do I do now? Right, I did tshuva. I accepted the fact that I have some ownership and cause in what happened, but that didn't help me get anywhere because Hashem, you didn't end up forgiving me. And he kind of falls back a little bit into that earlier stage that we saw at the beginning of the parak, which is that stage of anger. Even comparing Hashem, using those metaphors again, to a cloud that blocks off tefillah. And I would say it's a little bit disheartening here to almost come back at this stage of the perek, right? We're already 40 psukim in, to all of a sudden come back to that same like depression and anger that we saw at the beginning of the perek. But what happens then is that our lamenter, our individual, our author, begins to talk through his sadness, and his sadness here about everybody in the community. And ultimately, that leads him to end with a real wholehearted tefillah, a real wholehearted prayer to Hashem, and even an expression of confidence that even though he doesn't currently see God's salvation, he will see it in the future. Now, I want to close by talking through, I think, some important takeaways that come from this parak. So what we saw in this parak was the lament of the individual. We compared that to the memoir. It's the individual experience versus the communal experience. And our lamenter dealing with this tragedy went through a lot of different stages, right? The first stage was the anger, which moved into depression, then philosophy, action, depression and anger again, and ultimately tefillah, prayer. And I think there's a few, I'm going to say three things that I think we can take away from this. Number one, I think this is a really kind of important reflection that grief itself and mourning, this process of avelut, is disjointed. And it moves through lots of different stages, and these stages aren't linear, right? They can come back. They can be in an earlier stage of anger we saw, but then he gets past the anger, but then he comes back to it. And I think this is just such a powerful expression of the way that human experience works and the way that we process things. Secondly, the role of intellectual pondering has an important place. Either an outside voice, an internal voice. But I think this parak also tells us that you can't stay in that place forever. And all the intellectualizing and the philosophy needs ultimately to move into something else. It needs to move into a more practical stage and perhaps a more emotional stage. And lastly, the last point I want to make that I think is also very highlighted in this parak is something that I noticed when I was reading a book on Eicha, and it's a book by Professor Eliyahu Assis, and the book is called Meyeush Litzfilah, From Depression to Prayer. Now, really, after you hear the word Yeush, depression, you'd expect the contrast to be Tikva, hope, right? From depression to hope. But instead here, it's Meyeush Litzfilah. And I think that this highlights that even though there's no direct response from Hashem, somehow the act of tefillah connects him and helps him to actually feel answered. And he can move from depression to hope by the way of prayer. And that role that tefillah plays in our lives, keeping us optimistic and keeping us hopeful, is one I think that we always have with us in any situation. Thank you for learning Eicha Perek Gimel with the OU Women's Initiative. I look forward to learning together tomorrow.